Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. As always, this is our draft series. Today, we're doing pass catchers, wide receivers, tight ends. We will start with wide receivers, which means we should go for about 6 or 7 hours. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. For you out-of-staters, use the promo code 5, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's as simple as that. It's the best promotion anywhere. BetterEdge.com/5 reasons. You go there and you get $20 just for signing up. And of course, if you want to reach out to us and who knows, you want to ask us questions about what we said on this podcast, you can go on our Discord. It's discord.gg/OnlyFans, and you become a member there for $3 a month. All right, wide receivers. Simon, every year I do the same thing. I'm not going to get a list of about 300 wide receivers, but, you know, I try to go as deep as I can. And I go backwards. Very much how most people and myself, how we handicap horse racing. I don't, you know, put check marks next to who I like. I start crossing off who I don't like. I'm having a very, very hard time this year. Is this the best class, let's say, of the last 10 years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're kind of all prisoners of the moment, right? We're all, you know, everything is kind of now. But I mean, I'm just sitting here looking at the draft book, which will be available to buy probably next week. I have about 20 left to do, and details will be available on the podcast. I mean, I've probably got, I mean, I was just counting there. I kind of lost count. I'm in the 30s of receivers that I've written up. And it is, you know, there's something for everybody. You know, if you're looking for big, fast, strong, then it's there. If you're looking for physical, then it's there. If you're looking for hands guys, then they're there. If you're looking for guys that can block, you know, and a clone's a kind of a guy like Brandon Ayuk, then they're there. If you're looking for slot guys, then they're there. If you're looking for, you know, whatever you fancy, whatever your team needs, there is those guys. There are the Tyreek types in terms of the insane speed. It's a phenomenal class. And I think what you're going to find is here, and I'm sure you guys would probably agree, but what you're going to find this year is, you know, you're going to pick guys in the second and third round that in most other years you'd be getting around earlier. You know, the guys that you end up taking, whose names you'll hear in round two, in most other years would be round one wide receivers. And that's just how deep the class is. And at the very top, there is a separation of certainly three guys in Marvin Harrison Jr., in Roma Dunze, and in Malik Nabers, who are the best of the best. And they are all big. Nabers is 6 foot, 200 pounds. Dunze is 6'3", 217. And Harrison is 6'2 and a half, 205. I mean, these are big human beings. They are all running the 4.3s or the 4.4s. Nabers ran a 4.36. Dunze ran a 4.47. Harrison hasn't run, but I mean, you don't have to turn on the tape to see that he's no slouch. These are superior individuals who can run routes, who can catch, who can block, who've got, you know, they've got, I mean, Roma Dunze is one of my, he is my favorite player in the draft. Just athleticism, speed, separation, release packages, explosion, run after catch ability, toughness, blocking downfield, and he's got great hands. I mean, what more could you want? And he's clean as a whistle off the field, Chris. It's a sexy class. So just those top three guys in and of themselves are fantastic.
Chris?
You know, I love how you put that with how you go through the class and you're really having trouble just scratching names off.
Yeah.
Because that is actually exactly what I found with, you know, no matter how far down you go down the board and you start looking, I mean, I was just talking about Marcus Rosemary Jackson of Georgia. Right. And he's pretty far down the board. Right. But while I'm looking at him, I'm like, man, I could really get into this guy. You know, look at you're looking at I'm looking at a Jordan Whittington. He's pretty far down the board, right? Five-star prospect, and he plays, and he's like a five-star prospect turned culture guy, you know, who kind of like helps that turnaround story or helps Texas be, you know, the caliber team that they are. I mean, I'm like, man, I could get with this guy, and this, what is he? He's going to go in the seventh round, maybe? I don't know. And I think that's where the class is. I mean, there's strength at the top with Marvin Harrison and Roma Dunze and Malik Nabers. There's a little bit of strength in those next tiers, but you know, the class is so good that I kind of have to check myself because I'm like getting mad when guys that I take in the second round, I'm like, yeah, but I can't really imagine him being the next Ja'Marr Chase though. And you're like, oh wait, I was talking about a late second round pick, you know? And yeah. That's the kind of class it is. It's a good class. There's still going to be, you know, puts and takes on which guys we would like to see the Dolphins onto and which guys we don't. But yeah, it's deep and it's strong.
Yeah, it sounds like me today. I discovered that D. Wiggins exists out of Cincinnati. That guy is a UDFA, probably, right, Simon?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't even have him in my. I don't even have him.
He can play.
Yeah, like, I mean,
what's wrong with him?
I mean, Chris just talked about Rosamie Jackson. I've just counted through the dropper. Okay, I really like him. Chris, the three of us have had conversations about how much we like him. He is 22nd on my list of receivers in the draft book. Okay, like, and that's not to say it's a bad 22nd. There are just 21 guys above him who I think are really, really good. But like, you go down, I mean, Anir Smith, 24th on the list, a really good player. You know, the smaller school guys like Josiah Cephas of UTSA, 28th on the list. You know, you go down to, you know, in the section, the rest, there's a guy at West Florida called John Giles who made arguably the best catch I've seen all season. He's 6'3", 190 pounds. I was talking with Ben Fennell the other night, the NFL Network producer, CBS NFL producer, you know, and I was showing him clips of Giles. He's like, where has this kid been? And he's just like, you know, he's probably 31st, 32nd. There's a kid, Ryan Flournoy of Southern Missouri State, who turned up at the Senior Bowl. He's long at 6'1", 202 pounds, bodied up. You know, he was blocking Darius Robinson one-on-one. And he's just like, whoa, wait a minute. This is a bit eye-opening. You know, Chris just mentioned Jordan Whittington. He's 38th. My list. You know, how is that possible? You know, Xavier Johnson of Ohio State. You know, we talk about, you know, we were talking about off air. Xavier Johnson has 899 special team snaps on coverage units at Ohio State. You know, that's a guy that, you know, if you're looking in the seventh round for a guy that, who, you know, who can I bring in? Who's going to contribute to my team? I tell you what, this guy's got 900 snaps on coverage units and probably can help us out as a sixth receiver. I'm going to bring this kid in over somebody who doesn't play special teams. So, you know, there are just details and players, and it's a phenomenal class. You know, you dig into that just behind the first, you know, we talk about Nabers and, you know, Worthy and Dunze and Harrison and those guys, but you know, a guy that we all love, Xavier Leggett of South Carolina, Jalen mm-hmm. Polk at Washington, Jalen McMillan at Washington. You go down into the guys that, you know, that we've talked a little bit about, Javon Baker at UCF, you know, an Alabama mm-hmm. kid who transferred, mm-hmm. you know, Malachi Corley, a sort of Debo Samuel clone at Western Kentucky, who scouts and coaches up. A guy we don't talk about at all, Troy Franklin at Oregon.
Yeah. You know,
he's a guy somehow we never talk about him.
We never talk about him. He's a guy that makes Devonta Smith look fat, but boy, he can play. You know, the ball in his hands, he can play, he can run. You know, you got the smaller guys like the Roman Wilsons and the Ricky Pearsalls, and you know, it's just another guy we never talk about. Tez Walker at North Carolina was Drake May's number one target, was a transfer from Kent State. You know, he's a long striding speedster who can stretch the field. A guy that Chris and I have talked about a bit, Jamari Thrash at Louisville. You know, 5'11", 185 pounds. There's a lot to like about this guy. He's a high floor prospect. He's like 20th on my list of players. You know, you got Taj Washington, He's a slot of 5'9", he's 180, caught everything for Caleb Williams underneath, like just has an innate understanding of how to find areas in zones. And Malik Washington was the absolute standout of the East-West Shrine practices. He's 5'8", he's 192. Guys like this, just you're going to turn up as a third or fourth receiver and catch 25, 30, 40 passes out of the slot. You're going to play special teams. These are really critical. I mean, like, look at Jermaine Burton. He's one of the top four or five deep ball receivers in the draft, and probably the best deep ball tracker in the draft. He's 6 foot, he's 194 pounds. He was a five-star kid that went to Georgia. He transferred to Alabama. There are some off-field question marks. Absolutely, there are. He was arrested. There were videos of him striking a completely unprovoked at a guy, and then at a female, hitting the female fan in the head as he walked off the field after a defeat against Tennessee. He's had some injury issues, but this is a guy that can get down the field and can make catches, contested catches. He's got 10 and a half inch hands. I mean, he's probably going to go on day three. And it's just like, I mean, look at Brendan Rice, Jerry Rice. We're talking about Jerry Rice's kid as like
Jerry
the
Rice's kid.
24th best player. He's 6'2", 212 pounds. I mean, I don't love him, but I know there are people that are out there that absolutely do love him. And he's Jerry Rice's kid. He ran a 10.77 100 meters in high school. This kid can absolutely fly, and he's Jerry Rice's son. Crazy. Crazy.
You know,
All right.
it's funny you mentioned Jermaine Burton, because there's like getting to be kind of like a group of these wide receivers that you'd really like you'd really like on tape, right? And Jermaine Burton's one of them. Jalen McMillan, we've talked about him. And Adonai Mitchell, we talked about him too. I mean, there's a lot to love about these guys on tape, but then there's stuff that kind of is in the background or kind of in the whisper circuits that maybe you don't like, and those guys ends up going a little lower, and at some point you pull the trigger.
Yeah, absolutely. But
All right.
sometimes the value and the risk, kind of, there's a meeting point, isn't there, where you just like
Yeah.
the value is just too great.
Yeah, right.
By the way, this wide receiver class is so good that it also has my champion for the best name in the draft, Aju from USF.
He's the Clemson transfer, isn't he? He
Yeah,
was the
big
kid that
guy.
played with Trevor Lawrence at Clemson and was extremely highly regarded.
Great name. All right, so let's build out this first round, and we're going to take it round by round. We're going to go day one, day two, day three. So we're going to start with day one, and I think we can have a consensus here. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Romeo Dunze, that's the top three. I see no fault with any of the three. I think they're nearly, I wouldn't call them perfect. I don't like to call anybody perfect, but they're five-star prospects. There's nothing really wrong with any of the three. Your
Some
preferences?
off-field, there's some off-field things with Neighbors, I think, that are a bit of a concern. But I know that, like, you look at, I think it's Dane Brugler, the athletic draft expert. I think he has Neighbors as the number one overall player in the draft, and you look at his tape and you can kind of see why. But I think there are some, he was arrested. Certainly was arrested this time last year, misdemeanor charge of illegal weapons carrying. Wasn't charged in the end, and scout told Bob McGinn that there was some volatility, some immaturity, and that of the top three guys, if there's one whose makeup wouldn't allow him to reach his potential, it was Neighbors. There are definitely some, I've heard things. I've spoken to a couple of scouts, one in the AFC, one in the NFC, about some diva, nothing terrible. But some diva, some entitlement, that sort of stuff. So whereas I think Harrison Jr. obviously grew up around football. His dad is for those that have been living under a rock, his dad is Marvin Harrison, the amazing Hall of Fame receiver that played with Peyton Manning, Reggie Wayne, and Edgerrin James, Dallas Clark, and those guys in Indianapolis. And Adunze, as I said earlier, as clean as they come off the field. But they would be the top three. And then I think you're looking probably at Brian Thomas probably next. I would have Jalen Polk next because I think he's Brandon Ayuk in terms of coming out. He is a fantastic blocker. I mean, a fantastic blocker. This is a guy who just loves blue collar, down and dirty. He's a real crafty route runner, loves the middle of the field. Great leader, great off the field. And then you pick your poison a little bit. You've got Xavier Leggett, you've got Ladd McConkey, you've got Keon Coleman, who's the Michigan State transfer, McMillan, who we just talked about, Xavier Worthy, obviously he's undersized, but ran the 4:21 at the combine. And I think those guys are probably in the next tier. But then there's a Javon Baker and a Roman Wilson and a, Malachi Corley and a Franklin and a Pearsall and a Adonai Mitchell. And, there's going to be a run on them at some point, and the thing that will happen is there will be a run which will push other really good players down. And when the run starts, if you are desperate for a receiver, even if you think about taking one at 55, you're still going to get your hands on a guy that you'd probably take 30 picks earlier and any other year. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. By the way, in Brugler's draft guide, he has Malik Nabers as the third best player in the draft. He has Caleb
Okay.
Williams number one, Marvin Harrison number two. He
Interesting.
did move up Marvin Harrison up over Nabers.
I think Ollie I think Ollie Connolly has Nabers, and I mean it's sort of Nabers and Marvin Harrison, but it's
Interesting.
like kind of 1A, 1B, but it's clear that he likes Nabers more. But I think that probably like several people might think that way, but I think you've got it right with the off-field stuff, the character comportment, I guess I would say.
Yeah. All
Right, so we got the top three. Now, what we don't have is who's fourth.
yeah,
And
that's going to be different for everybody, man.
it's difficult, really difficult, because I was perusing, I wanted to see, my list and compare it to everybody else's and see where I stack up. Evidently, I have a day two target, if we believe everybody out there. As my fourth best wide receiver, I have Xavier Leggett. The
Yeah.
consensus, and when I say consensus, it's, these guys don't run teams, but they run their own little fiefdoms and they're on TV. Seems to be Brian Thomas Jr.
Yep.
And I'm just not seeing it. And I'll tell you why. And it's not that I don't like the prospect. I think he's a good player. But there's some red flags here because there's some, I'll give you this. I charted 50 players, statistically. He's 10th in average depth of target, okay, out of the 50 players. We know who his quarterback was, okay, so we can't blame a quarterback. His average separation was 14th out of those 50 players, but his vertical separation was first. Why is he in every single contested catch on an offense that should just have him wide open all the time? Why is he working so hard? Simon?
Don't have an answer to that, but what I do know is that you watch the vertical separation that he creates. He gets up on corners as quick as anybody in the draft. He can stack corners over and over and over again as quick as anybody in the draft. Now, I don't know whether it's a scheme thing. I don't know whether it's, I don't know what it is and the reasons why. To me, that he has just elite quickness off the snap. The one thing that I have heard probably more consistently about Brian Thomas than any other player in the draft is how incredibly impressive he was at the combine in interviews, that people were absolutely blown away by his football intelligence, by his ability on the board, by how he was able to. I mean, I spoke to a senior scout who said that he had, this was an AFC team, and he had studied this AFC team's offense and was able to go on the board and describe pretty much basic plays that this team ran, formations, motions, who the primary was, who the secondary target was, where pressure was coming from. Like, the guy was like this. This guy just blew them away on the board. And, I think that is not to be taken for granted because, in terms of the way that defenses are, and you look at the complexities of modern defenses, that a guy that just understands the game and understands his role within that offense is vitally important. The downside for me is that he's a 1 year producer essentially, but he does remind me of Mike Evans a little bit. I think that there is, just you look at the physicality, you look at the speed, you look at the snap in his ankles and and his hips, those sorts of things. I like him a lot.
Chris?
For me, and I think you point out the thing. If he's good, if he's as good as suggested, as you suggested in the on the board and in interviews and just understanding offense and things like that, that's gonna separate him. That's probably one of the reasons that he does have so many fans in the NFL, and he does. And I think that he's probably, broadly speaking, the wide receiver four for a lot of teams. So you know, and at the end of the day, he's 6'3" and 209 and runs a 4.33 and has all the GPS data to back up that speed from his college production. I'm always left wanting more from him, you know, whenever I watch him, and just wanting more, I guess I would say, in terms of just polish and overall game. You know, a lot of guys, there are some guys out there that it's just like, it just seems like no matter what they do, they have a lot of different tools in the arsenal. And the guy I compare him to is, and people are gonna say that's not a flattering comparison, but it's not how I mean it. But he does remind me of Marquez Valdez-Scantling, in terms of his height and speed combination, ability to get deep and stack. You know, he can, MVS can do that too. And he's very fast, and I think he's a guy that you watch play sometimes, and when he's making plays, you're like, how does he not have 1200 yards every year? That's to me what I think whenever I watch him play. And I wonder if Brian Thomas could be similar in that regard, but at the same time, you know, if he does separate himself with his, you know, his football schoolwork, I guess, then that would be a reason why he does get a lot better than that. I just think right now he doesn't have an overall complete game. I think he's pretty average after the catch, for example. I think that his blocking, you know, one thing you mentioned, comparing him to Mike Evans, but one thing that separated Mike Evans coming out of school, Texas A&M, was he was an absolute murder guy on blocking, right? And Brian Thomas is not that yet, but that doesn't mean he can't get there, because I think he's built well for it. I think he's strong. I think he's got the potential to be a good blocker. And at the end of, depending on which team you go to, you know, they're going to beat that into you.
Good play
So
strength.
you know. Yeah, so he has good play strength. So I think he will be a good blocker. I don't think he is now. But he's not, you know, he's pretty pedestrian after the catch. And even sometimes, you know, going up for the ball, there have been some things I'm like, ah, well, damn, you did it like this before. How did you, you know, why not this time? So I, you know, overall the Dolphins would be lucky to have the guy. But yeah, I think he's a good player with a few, you know, kind of annoying drawbacks.
Yeah, he's I have him eighth in yak per reception out of 50 players. He did average a drop per 9.5 receptions, so which places him pretty much mid pack. Another, and I think he's polarizing for you, Chris. So I'll let you take him first. But Donnie Mitchell. He
A.D.
looks like,
Mitchell.
yeah, Eddie Mitchell. He has a mixed bag of numbers for his entire career, which suggests pretty bad quarterback play. Tape looks fine to me. First of all, his average depth of target is number one in the class at over 16 yards. Good player. I don't see the faults you see in him, except when I get to his yak per reception. This guy essentially never ran after the catch his entire career. Like, how is
No, he
that
didn't.
possible?
I don't know how that's possible, but I mean, part of that's really the criticism. It's more symptom of something underlying rather than, you know, the underlying itself. Because he's got the skill to do more after the catch, I think. Although it's not very good skill, I would say it's very average, even when he's trying. But trying, that's is the thing. There's a lot of tape out there, and I've watched a lot of tape of him. There's a lot of tape out there of him just not trying and not playing with any kind of urgency. Of him, you know, kind of half-assing his way around the field. I was listening to somebody talking about like how you can almost, especially since they run a half field offense at Texas. So you could almost just see coming out of the huddle, which side of the field they were going to run the play to because, you know, there's AD Mitchell over there looking like he'd like to be anywhere else. And I think that translates into his blocking. He's very inconsistent in blocking. I think it translates even into his routes, where, you know, if there's some sort of if the DB has him or sits on a short route or something like that, he's going to let the guy cross his face. You know, he's going to let the guy cross his face and get after the ball. And it's almost like the attitude is like, well, he shouldn't have thrown it, you know? and so it's like, this is a guy that I think takes a lot of plays off, and he's got to answer for that. And I've heard similar from several other sources, you know, that are kind of admitting this. Now, when he is locked in and trying hard, he is a pretty good player. He's fast. He ran well. I don't think he plays to that speed, but that's, you know, kind of part of the whole, is he lazy or is he just not urgent thing. I don't think he plays with the urgency. I think there could be at times even a hands problem, even though he's been good on contested catches on the whole. I think that if you go especially halfway through the season, he looked like he was trying to catch the ball between two tennis rackets. There were a lot of double clutches. There was a lot of the ball getting into his wrist, into his face mask on one occasion, into his body. And I don't think he runs at, you know, absolute maximum speed. In part, it helps him concentrate on the ball. And then he's never going to be the guy that drops the ball because he's trying to run after the catch before the ball is secure, because he doesn't give a shit about the run after catch. I mean, I've seen him literally dive to the ground with, you know, say 6-7 minutes left in the fourth quarter of a tied ball game, you know, just like, nah, I'm done, you know? So it's throw, it's catch, and then the play's over for him. But so yeah, I do kill him on a lot of that.
What I will say about guys like that, and I completely agree with Chris's evaluation, is that you go broke when you select guys that don't seem to care very much in college. Do you know what I mean? And it's not just as a senior or in his final year. It is littered across his earlier work as well. And to me, you've got to care about what you're doing. You've got to want to put in the effort. You've got to want to play for your teammates. You've got to do the hard yards, the dirty work. That's why I love Polk so much, you know. And if you're not prepared to do that in college, what does that say for when you get to the pros? That's, you know, and if you've been doing it for 2 years plus, that is a big old faucet to suddenly turn on when you get to the NFL, where everybody is fast, everybody is tough, everybody, the level is so much better, stronger, greater than it ever was at Texas. That's a concern for me. And I personally, I don't say this with any knowledge or even hint of an educated guess, if the Dolphins draft Adonai Mitchell, I will eat a glass sandwich live on air, because that will not happen. That is just not a player whose makeup matches what Mike McDaniel wants, needs, or cares about in an offense. Zero chance.
Well, we're going to now come up to a group that Mike McDaniel will care about having here, because I think he would take any one of these three guys. Now, one of them can drop to the second round, and he won't be in the first round. But if dear listener, if you think that we're going too long here on day one guys, it's because I have 11 guys that could go in the first round. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's seven that go in the first round. So we're going to take this next group here, and we're going to talk about them in a group of three: Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey. Simon, go.
Well, I mean, look, my one criticism of Xavier Worthy is that I worry about his size. Okay, I get that he slimmed down to try and break the record, and he went down to 169 pounds. But he was only 174, 175 pounds before that, maximum 179. That is a light player in the NFL. Now, what I do like about him, and actually what's ironic about this, or not ironic, but what's interesting about this is that what I love about the three of us is that when our evaluations differ so greatly, it makes me question my own sense of where I am with a particular guy. And Worthy was one of those guys that Chris was very adamant about and has made me go back and look a bit harder. And he mentioned something that Ollie Connolly had said, which was that, and I hadn't picked up on, to be fair, which was that when you study Texas, and it is true because I went back and looked, when you study Texas, he is asked to do significantly more of the dirty work than you would think 170, let's say 175 pounder would do, in that because he's so fast and he is essentially covered, and then they roll a safety over the top of it, he would essentially just clear out so that the running game with Jonathan Brooks could work and the running game with Bijan Robinson could work, because he's carrying that safety and that cornerback down the field, and then they're running to that side in behind him, because he just does that over and over and over again. The ability to, you know, at 175 pounds to be able to block down the field, you know, he is extremely experienced, but he is undersized. He is an elite, like we talked about Burton earlier on as a ball tracker. Worthy is also an elite ball tracker, and he can run away from anybody. That 4.21 speed that he ran at the combine isn't just track speed. That speed shows up in college. I don't think his hands are amazing. I think he lacks kind of consistent hands. The other thing that we don't talk about with him is that he is a home run hitting return man. He left Texas with the second best punt average in history for a career, 14 and a half yards per punt return. And the season in 2023 at 16.9 yards per return was the best in school history. You know, and this is the University of Texas. This is not, you know, Southwest Alabama. This is Texas. You know, this is Ricky Williams and, you know, Earl Campbell. And, you know, this is proper. So I think that he is a very interesting player. I think he is tailor-made to go to an offense like the Dolphins, like the Rams, like the Packers, a team that can make use of him in space. I don't think he'll ever be a legitimate go-to number one, but I think he will be, in the right offense, an extremely good player. McConkey is quick and fast. I think he makes plays at all three levels. He's a tremendous route runner, and he has moves within moves in terms of how he runs routes, his body control, his hands. Jordan Reed, the ESPN analyst, had a great line about him, which was, he said, covering him is like watching cats trying to follow a laser pen. And I think that's entirely true. There are some injury concerns with him. He's been banged up a fair bit. But, you know, he's equally likable. And then who was the third guy that you mentioned?
Trey Franklin.
Oh, okay, Troy Franklin. Again, we talked about, touched upon him earlier. You know, thin framed, but, you know, he has got some jets. And I think, you know, we often talk about guys that play on the West Coast, and there's a little bit of bias against them oftentimes because people on the East Coast have gone to bed before, you know, some of these games are finished and whatever. He's a really good route runner. He's a precision route runner. He's a tempo route runner. There's no wasted movement when he gets to the top of his stem. He can eat up the cushion on go routes, like properly eat it up as quickly as anybody in the draft. He is a real pressure of the back foot of the DB. Oregon ran a lot of switch releases, and he is devastating on those kind of late switch releases. He's good at the catch point. He's long. He's 6'1". Again, he's light. He's 177 pounds, but he can win above the rim because he's an excellent jumper. He can play out the slot. You probably don't want him working in the middle of the field. But also, when he gets the ball in his hands, he just runs away from everybody. You know, he's another guy with, you know, Olympic type speed. He ran in the 10 sevens in the 100 meters. So, yeah, he is a What's quite interesting about him, and you say about the Dolphins, if the Dolphins ended up drafting Troy Franklin, his favorite player growing up was growing up. Makes it sound like this guy's really old. His favorite player growing up was Odell Beckham, who might just end up on the same team as him. But those three guys are really look, and quite frankly, you could see any of those guys going 25 to 32 in
Yes.
terms of, you talk about Kansas City Chiefs, you talk about, a couple of teams in the back end who want to add a wide receiver. Troy Franklin to the Chiefs, you could absolutely see. Xavier Worthy to the Dolphins, you could absolutely see. You could see Worthy to the Chiefs, absolutely. You could see McConkey to the Chiefs. Yeah, you could. These guys could go. And it's really just pick your poison in terms of how you feel like a guy is going to fit your specific scheme, your specific system. Do they play special teams? Can he play out of the slot? Can he play outside, inside? Can he block in the run game? Those sorts of things that whatever an offense does, the specificity of an offense and how a guy fits within that is really important. And some guys might have Jerome Baker as the 32nd best player, but he might not fit what Team B does, and so he's the 73rd player. And McConkey might be 25th on the Chiefs board and 55th on the, the Ravens, because he does. Yeah, it's pick your poison, although there's not much poison about these guys because a lot of them are so good.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm thinking that Mike McDaniel saw Xavier Worthy's advanced numbers because he's second in yak per receptions for his career out of
Yeah.
all of these wide receivers, number one in separation by Next Gen Stats.
I'm not surprised.
Chris, you want to touch on any of these guys before we move on to day two, which is going to be
Yeah.
pretty loaded itself?
Yeah, sure. I think that it's actually interesting to have these three players together because I think that they, for the Dolphins, they could play similar roles. And one of the things that I've brought up, and I do like Xavier Worthy. He's actually my wide receiver four, behind the big three. But the function that they would have on the Dolphins is you're talking about guys that, if the coverage is overly physical, then there could be a problem. And that's and so the natural thing to do with these guys, especially since they're so good at dragging players all over the field and trying to have them cover, is to get them in motion, is to hide them in stacks, is to sort of do the things that the Miami Dolphins do a lot. But the Miami Dolphins already do that a lot with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. And so if it's just like if you're trying to complement them, then there might be an issue. The Dolphins also get wide receivers purposely, intentionally get wide receivers on the field, and in so doing, take Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle off the field. They get guys on the field so that they can block, because they do like to establish the ground game. And they know that, no matter how much of a dog anybody is, like Tyreek Hill or Jaylen Waddle, there's limitations there from a blocking standpoint. And Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin are going to have those same limitations. I say this before, you can't just be a quote unquote willing blocker. It's like, how nice that you're actually willing to do your job. At the pro level, it will be beat into you. You do this or you're not on the field, especially at a team like Miami, who has kind of a blocking culture developing with their wide receivers unit. And so if these guys get in there into Miami, yeah, they're going to be willing blockers. But so is Brian Thomas Jr. and so is Xavier Leggett, and those guys have a lot more play strength and a lot more ability, will have a lot more ability that way. So it would be hard to get any of the three that you're talking about onto the same field with Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, knowing that there's blocking limitations all the way around. And the only situations where that can probably happen then are ones where that you're 80 to 90% passing anyway. Like the defense knows it's going to be a pass because of the situation or the game or, the scoreboard, whatever. You can do that on those plays because the defense already knows what's coming, and so, they already have the advantage. And when you get that kind of speed on the field together, then you can probably take and try and take that advantage back into your own court. But yeah, I like all three of those players a lot. I think they're all very good. I think Ladd McConkie definitely has some play strength criticisms that are valid the more that I look at the tape. But at the same time, if I've got to be honest about my gut feeling on him, I think the feet trump it all. You know, I think he is, you know, some really incredible sweet feet for a receiver, a wide receiver. And I think that just, I can't help but think that, yes, certain of these criticisms are valid, but at the end of the day, those feet are going to get him out of a lot and are going to get him by. And Xavier Worthy, the thing that draws me to him is I watch him at Texas. He was Texas's Tyreek Hill. And when I say that, what I mean is Texas formed a lot of their offense around him. They asked him to do the dirty work because they, you know, that Simon mentioned before, because they knew that eyes were on him every single play, multiple sets of eyes. And he was the guy that, the defense was scared of a lot. And gave him a lot of space because of that. And in effect, it impacts the entire offense, how much spacing you see because of the fear of Xavier Worthy. And I thought Steve Sarkisian used that very well to his advantage in the offense that he called there. And so, you know, I look at that, I'm going to be attracted to it immediately because, you know, this is the guy that is, for lack of a better term, the swinging dick out there. And so I think that that's part of what draws me to Xavier Worthy. I'm not going to have any illusions about him blocking. I'm not going to have any illusions about him attacking the football in the air, coming down with contested catches. I'm not even sure that he's going to be a really good, you know, third down chain mover, frankly, because he's not been. I forget the exact percentage. It might be like for the last 2 years, I think he's only converted 22% of his third down targets into a first down. Now there can be reasons for that in terms of shot selection, but still. So yeah, there are concerns about him, but at the end of the day, when you have some elite traits, and I think that he does have elite speed, quickness, run after catch, and all those things, and he's also a tough player. Like, he is I hate using this term so much, but he is a dog. And so, you know, I think that that's why at the end of, you know, I get to 21, he's available. I have a hard time passing on him just on a best player available type of thing. Like, I understand that there's an issue with complimenting the guys that we have, but I do have a tough time passing on him just on best player available basis, because, you know what, Tyreek Hill may not be here in 2025, you know, or 2026. So yeah, that's how I think. All three good, very good players. All three would be lovely in Miami. But I do, it's not a perfect complement to what Miami already has on roster.
All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we will begin with day two. But first, these words.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that business homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at wcufl.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 five-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
All right, and now we're going to take day two. We're going to take them in pairs. I have three pairs because we're going a little long, but like I said, you know, we only have 6 more hours to go on wide receivers here. First pair, Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett. I'll give my 2 cents. Xavier Leggett, the best prospect statistically in this draft for the wide receivers, even compared to his peers, number three in separation, number three in yak. He has the best route tree of them all as far as route over average. Fifth highest target share, so he's doing it on plenty of usage. He's my wide receiver 4. I'm pretty certain he's going to make it to day 2. Or maybe he doesn't make it past the Bills. Simon, Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett.
Leggett, I mean, I like both of them. I think Leggett is an excellent player. When I watched him play, I was blown away. He's a vertical long strider. He is a man coverage buster. The one thing I would say is production. You know, he only has a year of solid production. Given that he's been in college for 5 years, you know, he has less than 1,700 yards receiving in 5 years. And prior to 2023, his best campaign was 18 catches for 167 yards. The flip side of that is he was a high school quarterback. He only switched to receiver when he got to South Carolina. He's got a great frame, great size. He can play inside, outside. He can catch it short and run. He can work the middle of the field. He can go deep. When he gets the ball in his hands and turns up field, he is as good as there is in the draft in terms of just blowing past people. He is a good route runner. He can drop his weight and he can come back from the ball. He's got great body control. And he's a man coverage beater. Like I said, only Adunze, Neighbors, and Malik Washington had more yards against man. He had the highest yards per target, per route, and yards after catch versus man. He's great in contested catch situations. He reminds me of Nico Collins. That was who my comparison was. I just thought his all-round game was excellent. I thought he'd be a good return guy. He's apparently an absolute, there's Chris's word, an absolute dog off the field in terms of his work ethic. He actually has worked the last 3 seasons off-season with Debo Samuel, wants to be a head coach afterwards in college football. He's cerebral as well. I think he's great. One of the scouts told Bob McGinn that he was a bit naive, but a very good kid. His mum died of cancer in 2015. His dad died of cancer in 2019. He's had a lot to put up with in a fairly short space of time, but I think he's a terrific player. I really like him. And then Coleman, look, I think he's a bit more polarizing than some in this class because he's got a lot of talent. He's quick. He wins at the catch point. I think he's a better route runner than he's credited for Florida State. He made a number of great catches, especially at FSU. And again, but you talk about production, less than 1,500 yards in his career. There are some separation issues. He's young. He will only just have turned 21 at the start of the season. He's a good player, but you go back as well and look at what he did at Michigan State. You know, people talk about the Florida State stuff. But you go back to Michigan State. This was a guy who was significantly outperforming Jaden Reed, who just had an outstanding rookie season with the Packers, had 900 yards for the Packers. Florida State's passing offense isn't particularly high volume, you know. So he is an interesting player. I think there's much more nuance to what he does as a route runner. I don't think he's explosive. He's not in and out of his cuts in an explosive way. But with the ball in his hand, he can yak, he can hurdle, he can stiff arm. I this is going to sound like a criticism, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I sort of liken his profile a little bit, and profile his output to that of Devontae Parker in a way. He makes a lot of the same catches. He doesn't get a lot of separation, but he wins. He wins. You know, you go back to what Parker was like at Louisville. You go back to what Parker was like in the early days of Miami. You know, he would make fantastic contested catches. He would make great one-handed grabs. He would go up above the rim and get the ball, and that's what he does. And you know, he's 6'3" and 213 pounds as well. He's a good player. He is a good player. There are just some things that make me think he's probably going to come to him a bit slower than some of the other receivers in the class, but he's a good player.
Chris?
Xavier Leggett is an alien to me. Every time I watch him, he just looks like an alien. Just the way that body is built and
Just moves
the
different.
pout. Yeah, it's just different, you know. And
He
the
also has
guy
the
that
best
reminds
voice. He has the best voice in the
me,
draft.
oh
He
God, yeah,
does. Yeah, he's amazing.
I just want to hear that guy do interviews for Miami. But he is my wide receiver five. I think that. That reminds me of Derrick Henry and the way that Derrick Henry just looked like an alien at the position, just in terms of his body, the way he moved. It just is, and a lot of people didn't think that that was going to work actually at the NFL level because it's so, interestingly built. And yeah, he does remind me of that. And I think that as a glider, I mean, he's got serious acceleration and speed. The body to go with it, the strength to go with it. I love seeing him just belt a guy and who tries to press him and the guy goes flying, like that's just a really interesting player to me. I think that he went to the Senior Bowl and not surprising, first day he struggled a little bit with a couple of drops, but there are things that you look at even on those drops where you're like, wow, did you see the way that he separated like at the last moment to create that window for the ball to come in? Like that's a little bit more high level than the fact that you dropped an easy one. I think everybody ends up doing that. Not everybody ends up creating that late separation. So yeah, he's gonna statistically he was a wonder. He was the guy on the offense. You're always gonna get a little bit of bonus points with me if you were the guy on the offense. It's one thing that I have against, say Ladd McConkey or even Brian Thomas Jr. to some extent. Interestingly enough, the guy that reminds me of Devontae Parker, I think, is A.D. Mitchell, the guy we just talked about. But Keon Coleman, I actually think that's a kind of a fair comparison as well. It's really just lapses of concentration, I think, with Keon Coleman. He's not fast, we know that. I think would he run like a 4.6 or something like that. We know that he's not fast. We know that he can play well, like with good urgency though, when he's locked in. And we know that he's for as big as he is, don't think of him as not being a good route runner. Like that guy can run routes. He might actually be a power slot, at the NFL level. He can kill people in the ground game, really, really go after them. And so that's going to attract Miami to him. And then the age, is another thing is, hey, maybe this guy just wasn't quite mature enough to be locked in all the time. And other guys have had, Xavier Leggett been in school 5 years and how old is he? And so there's a fair point to bring up that way. I think the Dolphins will be looking at him, but ultimately I don't know if they're going to go for him because he might not have quite enough speed to spend that kind of pick, certainly not 21. But maybe not even 55.
All right, next pair, Ricky Pearsall, Jalen Polk, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, Polk is my number five receiver. I think he's just fantastic. I talked about him earlier on. I love him. He's 6 foot 1. He's 203 pounds. He is a blue collar, down and dirty player who loves to block in the run game. He has got craft as a route runner. He works the middle. He's a leader. He was a Texas Tech transfer. He went to the same high school as Dez Bryant. He is a kind of emotional leader at UW. He was voted to the Huskies Unity Council. He is absolutely accountable. He set up 6 a.m. playbook study groups for the offense every day. He practices with special goggles, which block his ability to see peripherally, so he can train his mind to focus solely on the ball. This is how much of a, you know, this is how much he cares about the game. I just think he is I just love how you watch him run his routes. They're so the tempo. No two routes are the same in terms of what he does. And you, again, that's where you see dedication to the craft. And you know how we talk about elite edge rushers kind of set up the tackle to fail. This is what he does. He sets up corners to fail by the routes that he runs and the things that he does. He's got excellent hands. He hands catches everything. You never see him short arm a ball. He is going to take vicious hits over the middle. There's a game against Utah where he takes a massive shot over a tight window ball over the middle. He bounces up and literally the next play, he comes straight back into the dangerous area around two defenders, catches the ball, takes the hit, gets up, and it's just like going straight back to the huddle. And it's just like, this is a guy that you want on your team. He just, you know, he's a really good player. And then the blocking, you know, he is so willing to block. He is unafraid of contact. He will come down into the formation and take on five techniques and three techniques as part of a double team. He will push corners and safeties all around, all over the field. And yeah, he needs a little bit of play strength to match up to NFL defenders, but he's a guy I would absolutely pound the table for. He has just got intangibles for days. And then Pearsall, what's interesting about Ricky Pearsall is that I was just watching Javon Bullard, the Georgia kind of safety, nickel, slot, box safety, kind of do it all, Swiss Army knife. He absolutely shut down Pearsall, which is says a lot about Bullard, actually, because I think Pearsall's a good player. He's a really good route runner, really good quicks, body control, great catch radius, he can get down the field. This is the guy, he runs fast and he plays fast, you know.
Yep, second in separation in this class.
Yeah, he's a high four, early to middle of the second round pick, great football intelligence. He's similar to Roman Wilson in terms of the traits that they have: blocking, toughness. He can work from the slot. He can play on the boundary. 23 miles per hour tracked on GPS, so he's fast. He just looks like a coach's dream. He wins all over at the line of scrimmage. He wins. He can win at the
20s. And he has great workout partners, by the way. I don't know if you saw the video lately.
Absolutely, his workout partners were two guys called Hill and Waddle. What happened to them?
Yeah,
I thought he was a bit like Adam Thielen, but with speed. He's just a smart kid. I think Arizona State transfer. I think he's a really good player. His dad played at Northern Arizona. He was a kick returner, like an All-American kick returner. And do you know how he taught to catch the ball? His dad taught him how to catch the ball.
Huh.
He caught it with Skittles, not the bowling Skittles, but the sweets. So he taught him how to catch it using Skittles as a motivation. So he would catch the ball and then he would catch Skittles. And the more balls he catched, the more Skittles he'd get given. And the less Skittles he'd have to catch because he was eating the Skittles. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, we used to do that. When I was really young, our coaches used to bring out raw beans. And we used to try to catch them with our offhand.
Nice.
You know? So
he's been 24 on opening day, so he's a bit of an older prospect, but he's a good player.
All right, Chris, take this pair. And then we got one final, and I'm going to have to make it three because there was one guy we left out. So take this pair, and then I got the last pairing or triumvirate.
Yeah, first off, Jalen Fulk, really, really have that guy on your radar for Miami.
Yeah, 100%. Even in round one.
I mean, we're talking, and I'm not just saying that because we like him, right? There's more reasons to say that than just the fact that we like him. Really keep that on, keep your eye on him for Miami. That's a guy that the Dolphins are very likely to be on to. I thought it's interesting, you know, he's sort of I know he doesn't force as many missed tackles as him, but it's like, you know, if Malachi Corley ran an actual route tree, you know. And I think that Jalen Polk, you know, has that physical toughness. I think the thing that stood out to me about the way they used him there at Washington is they're not, and this is attractive for Miami because they do have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but they're not trying to hide him at Washington. They will use him in after catch situations, but it's not like they're trying to hide him from physical coverage. Like, no, he was actually the guy that could take on the physical coverage while the other guys, you know, while the other guys, maybe you free them up because you're trying to, you know, juice up their potential production. I think that he definitely does all the dirty work. He definitely does a lot of good after the catch. He runs his routes really well. I mean, the one negative about him is he's not that fast. You know, he's not slow, but he's not that fast either. And so do you think that fits Miami's offense? Well, on an offense that already has Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, you bet. You know, so that's what I think of him. As for the other guy, sorry, Ricky Pearsall. I kind of go back and forth on him. Sometimes I do see him as kind of just a guy, and I wonder about, you know, what he's really going to be. Is he just a slot at the next level? And if he's just a slot, and I do actually like his play strength, so he can play in the slot, he can do some of the dirty work that slots do in the NFL over the middle and blocking and such. But you know, can he really play on the outside? And can he beat, you know, the kind of NFL players that he'll face on the outside? I guess, but then I think about that and I'm like, well, damn, but he plays really well. He has good feet. He runs routes really well. Aren't the makings all here? You know, why everybody is going to have to face better athletes in the NFL. Everybody's going to have to face better players in the NFL. So sometimes I think I'm being too hard on him, but the Skittles worked because that one catch, I think everybody knows, like the one Ricky Pearsall catch. That was one of the most impressive catches I've ever seen. You know, outside of Rondae Gadsden and two particular catches against the Jets and the Raiders. I mean, it was that caliber of catch.
All right, last group. And by the way, Ricky Pearsall, six drops against 159 receptions for his career. Yeah, he does not drop the ball. He has a good statistical profile, at least advance-wise. So I like Ricky Pearsall a lot. Last group before we get into day three, and I don't think we're going to go too long on day three. We've covered so many prospects. Last group, if you could write them down, Roman Wilson, Malachi Corley, Javon Baker. And by the way, Javon Baker, point of order, tied to the Dolphins for a very, very long time. So keep that one in mind at 55. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, Wilson works hard on his craft. You can see he's worked hard on his craft. You go back and look at some of his early stuff. He spent a lot of time with Ron Bellamy, who was the Michigan receivers coach, and it shows. He's a, like, to me, I wrote immediately Tyler Lockett clone. He's got great hands. He's quick. He'll block you all day long. He can run routes. He doesn't have the traditional size profile of what you'd regard as an elite prospect, but he just does everything well. He was great at the senior bowl practices. He's a winner. He won four state championships back to back to back to back in high school. He won a national championship with Michigan. So he's got that mindset and mentality, you know, of winning, which I think is really important and, you know, shouldn't be overlooked. Somebody knows how to win, that really matters. He was a member of Bruce Feldman's Freaks list. He was a state 100 meter champion, ran a 10.86. And who was his high school quarterback?
Who? Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua Tagovailoa.
There he is.
There you
How
go.
old is he?
I know. But I think he was there. Was Tua there? And no, maybe not. Maybe he just went to the same school as the same high school as Tua. But yeah, I mean, he's just a good player. And I don't think that the lack of passing volume at Michigan should hurt him because, you know, what he did at the Senior Bowl, I thought was, you know, he just turned up and he was the only guy to give Quinyon Mitchell, you know, trouble. He's controlled as a route runner. I really like him. Baker, another interesting kid who, you know, you make the point about how the Dolphins, you know, that there is interest there. I like Baker a lot. I think he would go significantly higher in a less stacked class. He's an Alabama transfer. He is one of the best big play threats in the draft, even though he's not, you know, he is not, he doesn't have elite speed, but 84% of his receptions went for touchdowns or first downs in 2023. I will say that again. 84% of catches went for touchdowns or first downs. He had 18 catches of 20 plus yards. He averaged 22 and a half yards per catch. You know, like this was a guy that was at Alabama behind Jalen, behind Devonta Smith, behind John Metchie, behind Jameson Williams. I just think he's abrupt as a route runner. He changes direction. He's got great hips. There's no wasted move, and he can work back. He's not scared to work back to the quarterback. He's physical. He'll go up above the rim. He's got a great catch radius. He's got unbelievable body control. He's like an acrobatic Robert Woods, is what I called him. And apparently an alpha off the field. And Jim Nagy said that he is one of the most well-liked players amongst the scouting community that he talked to in Senior Bowl week. And then Malachi Corley is kind of, you know, Chris touched upon it and absolutely nailed it, but he's kind of this kind of Anquan Boldin, Deebo Samuel type body. The yak, you know, he has more yards after catch than any receiver in college over the last 2 years, and by a significant amount. He is a
Yes.
problem with the ball in his hands. Like
By
he's a
almost 3 yards, by the way.
yeah, he is a legitimate problem for teams with the ball in his hand. He was recruited as a corner, then he switched to running back as a freshman, and then to receiver. And he has got that. You know, he's 5'10", 215 pounds. He's just got that. You know, if he was a running back, you would think that that was what he was. And, you know, but he screens, angle routes or screen concepts, tunnel screens, quick hitters underneath where he wins, and then, you know, has the ability to turn into a running back with the ball in his hands. Like Chris says, he doesn't have the most translatable route tree. But he does what he does, and he does what he does well. And sometimes I think that we're always so keen to, not we, the three of us, but just scouting community, whatever we fall into, we're often so quick to talk about the stuff that a guy can't do. And actually, you know, I think the beauty of people like Mike McDaniel and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and people like that is that they just create situations where you get the ball into the hands of playmakers. And they do what they do so well, and you worry about the other stuff later. And I think Corley's true value is when the ball is in his hands. And I think if you can get the ball in his hands in situations, and you can create touches for him, manufacture touches for him, then I think he'll be a really good player.
Chris.
Malachi Corley, is the answer to the question that we've been asked ad nauseum for 2 years, which is, who's your Deebo Samuel?
That's true.
there he is, right there. His name is Malachi Corley. And the reason that people will be drafting him, the reason, listen, we joke about his route tree, because his route tree is kind of a bit of a joke. But at the same time, you're drafting him knowing that this isn't this isn't a revelation to anybody who's watched him play. You're drafting him because of an elite trait, something that you don't see very often, and something that you think that you can probably base his game around and get him better. And make him the player that he will be, not the player that he is. I mean, the player that he is already quite effective and a really good football player. This is a guy, that, well, like you said, I mean, as far as the run after catch and the yards after catch, there's no competition. And I think that it's fair to say he was the guy on his offense too, and you'll hear me point that a lot. 2 years running, at least, you'll hear me point that out a lot with players, and there's a reason. I think that when you are the guy on your offense, and I'm looking at Malachi Corley, I'm looking at Xavier Leggett, I'm looking at Xavier Worthy, I'm looking at guys like that, Roman Dunsey, the top three. When you're the guy, you get, and Javon Baker, by the way, who I'll talk about in a second, is the same. You're getting the defense's attention, right? And so there will be game plans, there will be efforts to stop you, and you're asked to overcome that. And I think that that's something that you're looking at with Malachi Corley. He has an elite run after catch trait, physicality, and it's Anquan Boldin like, you know. That is very much a fair comparison as well. Now the other guys that you talked about, among them, Roman Wilson is a guy that, you know, you're gonna like as a slot, but I do question sometimes is his play strength. And one of the things about being a slot is you're going to be asked to do some dirty work in there. And so he's going to have to get stronger and be able to live up to what's asked of him that way, because I think that he is mostly a slot at the next level. He can be very attractive, but there are some guys that I've seen that play a lot like Roman Wilson in the past that can be attractive. And, you know, I'm not sure what they're going to be as a pro. Can he play on the outside? I think he's more of a build-up speed than he is, twitchy quickness. And so that's my concern about him. Would Miami be interested in him? Maybe, but I'm not sure if it would be at 55. Now, Javon Baker, he's among the players that I would consider to be the most ideal complements for Miami, what Miami already has on roster. It's not, you know, there's two things. There's schematic opportunity, because you know that your schemes can support a player. And, you know, there are other players that we've talked about that have schematic compatibility that way. I think Javon Baker does have schematic compatibility easily, but also the roster compatibility. You know, what do you already have going on? Who plays what role already? And so what would you be looking at doing in year one versus year two versus year three? Some of these guys, including Javon Baker, including Jalen Polk, including Xavier Leggett, would have really good compatibility with what Miami already has. Javon Baker is a very strong guy. He is going to be a phenomenal blocker as a wide receiver. He's going to be phenomenal on third downs because he runs his routes really well. He has a good catch radius, and he's a big playmaker. Now, the one thing I will address is the speed on him. I usually hate saying this, all he plays faster than he times, but sometimes it's supportable with data. And with Javon Baker, I think before he went to the combine, before he tossed anything down on the 40-yard dash, I look at places like Real Analytics and places that that offer GPS data or tracking data from the video. And he was among the guys that, you know, have elite speed. And so they actually expected him to run faster than he did at the combine. And sometimes I just have to chalk it up and say, this is kind of a track technique too issue. Do you have track and field technique, or do you have, football field technique? And sometimes there is a difference between those things. I think Javon Baker is one of those kind of more rare than maybe others think instances where that could be the case. I consider him to be something like a high 4.3s kind of guy, or, you know, I would compare him with guys that are like that. I've seen a lot on him. I think that he is a very hard worker. He's got great work ethic. He was the guy on that offense. I think he can move the chains and make huge plays all over the place, but also be a dog as a blocker and just really complement what Miami has very well. He would be, if I was going to go with a receiver at 55, and if you were available, you know, that's probably my favorite outside of Leggett. And I don't know if Polk is going to be there at 55 either, but yeah, those three.
All right. And we didn't touch on Tez Walker. If you want to touch briefly, Simon, before we move on to day three, you could give us 30 seconds on Tez Walker, UNC.
Yeah, he is, just where do we start with these kids? I mean, it's mental. I mean, he's another interesting guy. He's a transferred essentially to be Drake May's kind of, his guy, really, his number one receiver. I thought he had an excellent year. I don't like him as much as some people do, but he's smooth, came from Kent State, long strider, a speedster. He's tough. He can stretch the field. There's some buyer beware for me. I don't love him. I think he's Jalin Hyatt-esque. And we kind of seen the lack of impact that Hyatt's had. I think he's a sort of mid to late day two player, I think, rather than, being, I've seen him kind of up in the first round and the back end or the back end of round one, early round two. I think he needs a bit of polish in his route running. I think he relies more on speed than subtlety and tradecraft. He's bursty. He's twitchy. He was a willing contributor in the run game. I just think he's just a bit raw as a route runner, and the successes he has tends to be one-on-one down the field rather than more nuanced stuff that you almost have to play in the NFL. So, he's got a lot of pluses, but I just think it's a guy that's fairly inexperienced at the highest level, just had 1 year in North Carolina. And I think he just might take a little longer to come to the fore, to the boil, than some of the others in the class.
All right. And now we're gonna, right before we go to break, and we're gonna come back with tight ends. Trust me, we're not, I don't know, you've been listening to us this whole time. We're not gonna spend too much time on tight ends. But before we go to break, Simon and then Chris, Simon first, give me three day three prospects. And if you could tag on to that, is Johnny Wilson a tight end or a wide receiver from FSU?
I'll answer that one first. I think he is a obvious potential mismatch nightmare because he's 6'6" and 237 pounds. He's insanely inconsistent. He drops way too many passes, and I just wonder whether or not he can get open against NFL cornerbacks because consistently he didn't do at Florida State. The question is, yes, should he move to tight end? I think that will take developmental time too because I don't think he's that much of a blocker. Yeah, otherwise he's kind of Colin Johnson, really. I just don't really see it. There are just so many inexcusable drops. He's sort of functional, and there's no real nuance as a route runner. In terms of three guys I'd like later on, blimey, I mean, there's so many. That's the annoying thing. I mean, I talked about Flournoy. He's 6'2". He's 200 pounds. He was a kid that was at Central Missouri, went to Iowa Western Community College, ended up at South Missouri State, turned up at the Senior Bowl. And was excellent. I think he's a really interesting guy. I quite like Isaiah Williams at Illinois, who's a convert from QB to receiver. Only happened in 2021. Led the Big Ten in receptions for two years later. He's been a bit of a gadget player because of his inexperience, and you're kind of going to manufacture touches for him. But he's an interesting, intriguing guy. I mean, the guy I mentioned earlier on, who I really like, is Taj Washington of USC. I think Brendan Rice has the body. Washington was just the better player. He's smart, he's tough, he's got instincts, he's athletic, he's great hands, absolute grand slam day three bargain as a slot who can contribute immediately on return and coverage units and just play inside the formation because he just knows how to get open in small spaces. He was fifth in the nation for receiving yards on targets of 20 plus yards, only behind Adunze, Harrison, Neighbors, and Brian Thomas. He's just smart. He's a budget Amon-Ra St. Brown, if you like. So Washington would be my guy.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that so three well I think Simon is right to go with Taj Washington, but I won't make him one of my three. But yeah, that's I'm a big fan of his. I think you described him well. I think Jamari Thrash is interesting as well for a day three. But what I would go with is two other guys who I think fit well as complementary players to what Miami already has. One of them I already touched on a little bit, Jordan Whittington of Texas. If Tyreek Hill was, or sorry, if Xavier Worthy was the Tyreek Hill, then who complimented him? Then that's the question, because that's what we have to do in Miami. And the more I looked into Jordan Whittington, looked into his run after catch skill, looked into the way he runs routes, the leadership qualities, he does have a good athletic profile. He's just, you know, you wish that he could come away with some tougher catches sometimes, but he was a running back. That's why he was a five-star recruit, by the way. He was a five-star running back recruit. But anyway, I think that he's a good one to look at for Miami in day three as a compliment. Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint of Georgia, also another compliment type player. You know, these are all guys that are very physical. They can stand up to the physical blocking and coverage that they'll be asked to do because their names are not Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint in particular, just the way that he attacks the football in the air is really attractive. And he can go up and get it, you know, big catch radius, go up and get balls that are behind him, low, high. He really, and he's faster than he's got a speed and a quality to him that is not well described by whatever his 40 time is. We don't even know. That I think that you can pick up on when he's actually running his routes. There's a quality to him in the way that he runs his routes and gets open that does remind me of Juwan Jennings of San Francisco. He's not as big as Jennings, but he does have that sort of quality to him in the way that he moves and the twitchiness and just the combination of twitchiness and fluidity. And it's really good with him. And you know he's going to block and be physical. And I think that actually in an offense like Miami's, because one of his weaknesses is, you know, because he doesn't have great speed, the longer you go on the route, the more likely it is for the defensive back to start closing in on him. But luckily, Miami's offense is just so incredibly focused on getting the ball out within a very specific time window that tries to maximize the separation that these guys are able to produce. And so I actually think that he could make more of an impact in Miami because of that, because he does have a certain a trickiness in the way that he creates separation and creates a window to him. And then, of course, he's got the physicality and ball skills to finish that catch.
All right. And we made it. Okay. We made it, you know, with 5 hours to spare. I promised 7 hours. We did almost two. All right. We went long with wide receivers. So we're going to call it right here. And we're going to tack on tight ends to the next position group that we do. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.